Roger Hodgkinson. Not here. Alan and Robina Johnson. We've read the original submission and we've also read the pre-circulated evidence that you provided, so thank you very much for taking the time to do that. That's been helpful. You don't need to read any of that stuff out to us because we've already read it,
yep.
But you're very welcome to speak to it and outline your key points for us.
Cool. Good morning. I'd like to say I've had Eric in 2010 be a speaker at our property for the United Nations Biodiversity Year, which pretty much in 2010 nobody knew what biodiversity really was. So we've come a long way. We've got three covenants, and thank you. And we've had numerous land sustainability team. We've had iwi out, and we're working on an MOU, which will be quite different to what other parties will be doing. We were in Gore, we're 10 kilometres from Gore, and we, as I put in the submission, whether we've just acquired another 100 hectares of land, and our terrain is probably one of the most challenging terrains that you could possibly find. It rises up to about 1800 feet and then it falls back down to a road that we share, which is Donovan Park Road. We don't have anything against the physiographic zones. The hill country is quite clear, and our new property is the Lignite Marines area, which that's quite clear, and it's quite. And we've got the soil for the new 100 hectare ground, which is quite heavy ground, and it has been dairy grazed and has got huge compaction problems, and is incredibly wet, which is quite a different type of farming we're struggling with at the moment. I'll go back a bit because I've been following the freshwater policy since it came out, and then also submitting to the regional policy statement. At the time of doing the land and water plan, we had WSH basically that failed and went broke and had 2 days notice and then basically 8 weeks, so it was very challenging. And then basically when the next time to submit to the draft was when we were taking over the new farm, and was another challenging time, which I won't go into detail. In that time, since 2004, we have spent a lot of time fighting different kinds of battles than the average person, which is with solid energy. So a lot of our resources have gone into that. We have done some riparian planting, obviously those QE2 covenants, but some of our plantings are for beautification or shelter, because we have also, with challenging terrain, we also have to contend with the Hamori, which is the wind from the rear from the Takatemus, which most people don't know about. Hamori is another name for Croydon. And I think in my later submission I put that we are on a Treaty of Waitangi landmark, and we're proud of that. That only got placed in 2008, which should have been actually done in 1906, and there's two other zones that we've reported to council first and to iwi, and still those matters need followed through. I put in there too that we've worked with parties, but it hasn't always been very successful. Like 2012, we applied for the Environmental Enhancement Fund, and at the time too, we were lobbying that basically, if you are, you know, offering funds, then there does need to be some form of protection, because with the trees scheme, well, most of those trees are now gone. But so in time, we do need to probably, you know, put forward another application for that. But that was pretty much for, at the time, we believed, for the pukekos that were threatened with the development next door, but also made sense to have a wetland before our farm was exiting the next boundary. Half of our waterways we share with neighbouring properties, and we probably need, you know, more than one wetland. Just heard yesterday with Fish and Game that with our new block, it could be one of the best wetland areas that they've actually seen. So that's really good news, but still has reservations, because even working with QE2, it's taken us, you know, 7 years after our following QE2 covenants to finally get some response, because it got lost. And then even though we visited QE2 office and they said, well, these are really incredibly unique covenants for Aotearoa and Morohuku, it still wasn't followed through, even with very minimal cost, with it all being fenced, but one being an umu, which is a little bit more challenging. But Dean Whanaunga has been out and had a look at that, so we're not sure where that's going yet. And results have been mixed, but we really like the land sustainability team. We just recently completed our second focus activity farm plan. We have done a level one LEP. We can't do any further than that in the LEP. I really liked, that's what I wanted to focus on a little bit, I really liked the LEPs, and I advocated that from 2012 because I didn't really want to see duplication of systems. But Beef and Lamb, they renewed their system, which is great. And the only thing I don't like about the LEPs is that Overseer, which is, you probably heard a little bit more about that now, that it's a black box system, the algorithm isn't known, and so that could change. So, and it's run by industry. And I don't think Overseer is the band-aid that is the answer to our prayers. I would like to see more for terrain like ours, a mixed, even though I advocated for there being simple measures for farmers like your 3, 6, 9 and different metres, with our terrain there needs to be multiple steps. And I've just been to Canterbury, and even at Lifestyle Blocks, what they have to put in for their storm runoff is they have retention ponds on their properties. I thought, well, that same thing really applies to like our farm. We really need to be able to have a system that can calculate how many ponds we really need to stop the velocity, the accumulation of water, and then sediment loss. Our soils are probably a little bit different than others. We believe that are a lot more healthier because we're biological. They can retain more moisture. We do aeration. That aeration basically is successful for a couple of years, but then you've also got to put in afterwards species that have got deep rooting structures. More people are using plantain and chicory, red clover, which will assist that, and lucerne. So that will help, especially in droughts, because you've got long rooting species, you've got better aeration, and so you've got a healthier soil. There needs to be, sometimes what I see locally, because I have got probably a bit more of an environmental title than most people, especially fighting solid energy, which was the land was next door, the 100 hectares was formerly solid energy land. But, you know, we've applied for different stuff and it hasn't been successful. But then our neighbour gets a 300,000 K biodiversity fund after burning you know, an HVA area. So there seems to be some discretions there. I hope you all understand what biological farming is, which is reducing synthetic and chemical inputs. Biological farming is quite broad. It's not specific like organic. Ellen and I have done many courses, and I'm really impressed with one I've done March last year, which is through the NutriTech systems, which is Graham Sate. But the health of our soil and more sustainable farming. And I wouldn't mind giving that to your land sustainability team, especially if you have a soil scientist. So we've planted, I've put in submissions, and other people have also, that riparian planting also is not necessarily, we already have a highly biodiversity terrain, and many of the gullies have got native bush in it, some have got QE2, but we can continue on with QE2 as long as there's funds in QE2. Which is a bit more challenging these days, especially when you've got a lot more overseas ownership, and there seems to be a lot more partnerships with QE2 for providing QE2 covenants, and then providing funds in the form of tourism. So this morning I went through the focus activity farm plan and came up with some calculations. It says we've got 16,043 of waterways with permanent fencing stating potentially planned being 10 kilometres. We based it on $14 a metre with a contractor, but one gentleman basically was basing it obviously on 17. It does depend because, I mean, like our country, there's additional costs because there's site preparation. We have, I put in the submission that we basically are 70-30, so we have 30% basically beef cattle, that's about 170 bovines. Yes, bovines are the main cause of E. coli pollution and major health risks to humans. We calculated all the fencing that was put into the focus activity farm plan at pretty much 250,000 for stock exclusion. And then you've got basically riparian planting consents and etc. on that. What I did in our main part of the section of farm, the 424 hectares, we Environment Southland couldn't provide us any soil mapping, but that hasn't come out yet, the soil mapping from whether it's the Thompson Plain aeromagnetic scheme that all the councils funded and the aquifers. So we haven't got that data on what type of soils we actually have. But there are systems out there, and I haven't got it on here, but I'll forward it to you later. Just had some glitches with computers in the last 24 hours. We've done a GIS map, and we've forwarded that to Environment Southland as well. And not every farmer would do a GIS map because it's far more accurate, but it is expensive. And then that company, Imagine Photographics, went bust, so we couldn't complete some of the things that we intended to. But really, LIDAR data. What happened in the focus activity plan is you don't have really good mapping data to tell me how much is above the 20 degrees. Where the swales basically connect to those critical source areas, which is the key pathways for runoff. So I'd like to see better data still in the focus activity plan, because in here you still didn't identify like sediment traps. Yes, the wetlands we've put in our new block, but the first block there was no identification of wetlands in that section.
Um,
because like in one section, which we boundary with the road, it's underneath the famous HVA area called the Waterfall Range, which cascades over a neighbouring property. Potentially at the bottom of that, that should really have a wetland. I've put in the submission that as well about sacrifice paddocks and going to some different events. Everyone has a different terminology of sacrifice paddocks, and Alan was talking about it last night, how sacrifice paddocks were sort of came about since, well, the sacrifice paddocks were sort of around until sort of electric fencing. So with sacrifice paddocks, how we use them is when basically the soil retention is basically high, not just when weather bombs. So basically last year, as you know, was a really chronic time for rainfall and runoff. And with winter grazing, you have, which we do brassicas, swedes, you've got 4 months of soil that is exposed, releasing carbon. And so with sacrifice paddocks, you're making sure that how it was originally done was that you feed your sheep and then you used another paddock, but you also use that other paddock to put on your feed, so your hay or whatever you were doing. So that meant you weren't double compacting the soil as well. I really liked some of the aspects of the LEP. The LEP wasn't a one-on-one, it was actually with a peer group. There was about 12 of us, all similar. Well, the one that we were in was basically similar farming, whether that was planned or not. We were basically sheep and beef. And it was just nice to be in amongst, just like the health and safety workshops as well that Beefland did. You're with your peers, you come up with great ideas. With a focus activity plan, with being more one-on-one, it sort of can be potentially just, you know, put in the cupboard and missed. It does say in there that this is a recommendation, and we hope to follow this up over the next year. But $250,000 worth is pretty, is a big jump, which means that we'll definitely have to do some subdivision. And thankfully, close to Gore, there's more demand of lifestyle blocks, and we've got a pretty amazing place. And it means also that we can protect Matamata even more so by not only putting in covenants, but also having more people residing in our location. I'll probably leave it there, and then you can ask questions really. Yeah.
Right, thank you very much for that. It's a very full presentation. It's not a criticism, that's a compliment. So I'll just see if the panel members have any questions of you in terms of the actual changes you've sought to the plan. Lloyd?
Yes, just one on the winter grazing. With the way the rules are set out now, you made comment that you had gone from 20 to 50.
You guys have gone from 20 to 50.
No, the recommendation of the 42A report is that it goes from 20 to 50.
Yes.
That still sits well with you?
It was a surprise, yeah. We went to a Federated Farmers event that was at Lumsden.
That's right,
yeah. Yeah, and they asked people to put their hand up at that time, and there probably was about just under probably a third of that group, it was a full hall at the RSA, that put their hand up. But I think the thing is, we aren't fans, even though my grandfather was the first person to have Jersey cows on the vulnerable soils of Paratai, we aren't favourable to dairying. We're very loyal to sheep and beef, and we enjoy our terrain, and so you wouldn't catch us having dairy cows on our terrain. What's happened is you've got mixed businesses now that are basically sheep and beef and also winter grazing cows now. So I think that there's been a big change, and I think a lot of the guys have, there's just mixed businesses and that was sort of like the first indication probably of seeing how many people potentially do have a mixed business.
And just to follow on from that, if and it comes on a number of things you've mentioned, if you needed the consent, you're quite happy to work through the systems that would need to be for your farming system to have consents.
As long as you, I think you've got really good LIDAR information, which I'm thinking that's where you're going to have to go, and consents aren't onerous, as in like they're quick, aren't going to be majorly expensive. On top of 250,000 fencing, I'm thinking, you know, there's already a lot of costs, yeah.
But you can see the need that in some cases the major
I think, I mean, because I don't believe, as I went to some of the earlier submission hearings, I don't think Environment Southland is a beast. I think farming, because I've not always been in the farming sector, but I think farmers do need rules and you have to work one-on-one with them. And what surprises me is that how much money you have to spend on actually sending that message. You really have to spend a lot of money with media, and you need to have definitely one-on-ones with your farmers. Yeah.
Thank you, Ms. Jones.
I'd just like to add something about the 20-degree ruling, probably because our farm's probably in the top 5% of steepest farms in Southland. We'd be heavily restricted on the home farm as far as cultivation goes, like we do 20 hectares of Swedes. And I'm just going to point out my experience over the last 2 years, whereas the paddock we've worked, one of the paddocks we've worked this year, is well over 20 degrees, but it doesn't have overland water flows. We've started from the top, worked down, and we haven't lost hardly any soil at all compared to the paddock we worked last year, which is probably only the half of the degrees of slope, but it had a lot of overland water flow and we had an awful lot of erosion. So I think overland water flow does more damage than degrees of slope. And I think if the 20-degree rule goes ahead, I'd still like to see farmers like ourselves, even if we're not allowed to put a winter crop through the system, that we still be allowed to go from grass to grass direct drilling where there's no disturbance. Well, basically there's no bare soil, but we still need to be able to regrass. That's about all the points I've got there. And the only other thing too is, just with a lot of fencing of waterways, there's going to be an awful lot of gorse and broom going to grow, and we basically spend all our spare time fighting the stuff, so that's a big cost.
Yeah. Especially with the neighbours that we've got that are all, you know, next to the dock reserve, pretty much all gorse if you go along the Wantwood places and that, and neighbouring Hockenheims.
We did go past your place as a panel on one of our tours. It's actually a wild deer standing in one of your paddocks.
Yeah. During the day?
Yes.
Oh, wow, you're lucky.
But my question is...
did you refrain?
with the covenanting and retirement of land that you've done, has this impacted your carrying capacity at all?
Not at this stage, no. And of course we've bought the other block now, so we're going to move our cultivation probably for the next 4 or 5 years down there anyway.
Because that's what Alan was finding, that the our paddock rotation was happening too quickly. Yeah. So the demise of Solid Energy was worked out really well, because then this whole new farm has got just old pastures. And it's needing major development.
Because basically we were on a 10-year rotation, you know, because we only got to cultivate 500 acres out of the 1,047. So, yeah, we'll move it all to Laura Land now.
Thank you, Chair.
No.
Anything else?
Yeah, good morning. Just on the 20 degree and over cultivation or an overland flow, is that seasonal dependent? Just depends on the type of.
Well, last year was, the last 2 years, like I've said to Council, Gore Council, because they've had to change our culverts, because we get a lot of runoff with Donmore Park Road. There's no soak pits that the council, that the roading guys put in, but they've had to seriously put huge four times the size of what was there beforehand. And the last 2 years, especially last year, the runoff is incredible. We're having to have a culvert just done at the bottom of our property because it floods across the road and down on the Reby Road there also. It's just the water that does come off the Hokanui's is short and sharp. Yeah,
now. Because a lot of the paddocks that you are working, you know, they're at the base, and a lot of those overland flows are coming from heavy spring water in the top of the hill country. Yeah, but if you are at the top of the hill, you know, you haven't got that overland flow, and I'm quite surprised, considering how steep one of the paddocks we have worked this year, that the lack of soil loss.
That goes down to swale plumes. Well, I looked at British Columbia and I put that through in one of the submissions, that we really have to tie in, and that's what Clint Risman is doing, is tying in the swales with the critical source areas, because, I mean, we would have more critical source areas than anything on the percentage on our farm. Yeah.
Just on, you mentioned the Treaty of Waitangi landmark.
Yes.
Is that something that came out of the Ngāi Settlement Act?
I'm not sure which one to go. 2008 is the Hokanui Hikoi, and we weren't notified or anything like that. And there's another interesting story to that, but it just basically we came across that it was put as Shipscombe Mount Otapuri was under the Treaty of Waitangi as a landmark in 2008. Donalmore Park Road has still got a government deed on there, and also East Peak, which was supposed to be done by, there was two commissioners that came to Gore in 1904 or 06. I have got their names here, but I have passed it on to council and to Terry at the Runanga, and I'm waiting to see what will happen with the other two, because they didn't know they existed, and they found more because of those commissioners, they found more reservations.
The Runanga didn't know they existed.
They didn't know they existed, No, I only found, I knew through papers passed, through research, that they were supposed to be done, and then when basically the land came up for sale, I could see government deed, yeah. But what ended up happening is the coal industry started booming.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Morris, any additional matters?
No, my questions have been covered. Thank you very much. It's been very comprehensive.
Cool.
No, I'm not sure of the questions either. Thank you very much.
Oh, great. Thanks for your time.
No, you're welcome. Thank you. Right, we'll now adjourn for morning tea and we'll reconvene just after 10:30. Thank you.
And I commend you for the amount of time you have to give to try and meet all the requests of all the people